And welcome inside Bank of America Stadium for this Panthers podcast being recorded on Thursday, May 17th. Bill Pope alongside Max Henson, Brian Strickland. Everybody's here and somewhat healthy this week, so that's good. And not sure if you guys heard the news, but there might be a new owner soon.
Well, yeah, I did hear about that, Bill.
Yeah.
I did. I wasn't on vacation or anything. Mr. David Tepper, I think people, all of our listeners have probably heard that name, is awaiting, what, just here in a few days, his time in front of the NFL owners at their meetings in Atlanta to kind of discuss his candidacy. And I think we know what will probably happen with that discussion and vote, but nothing's official yet.
It doesn't get this far unless they know that it'll be a yes vote. So, yes, just some formalities before David Tepper is the new owner of the Panthers. And, Max, your first impressions of David Tepper?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that makes this such what appears to be going to be such a seamless process down in Atlanta is, you know, he's familiar with the league, right? And he's been a minority owner with the Steelers for a few years now. The ownership at large is familiar with who he is and what he brings to the table. And, you know, in reading up on him and, you know, some of the other things that have been written about this process in the past few days, I mean, you could see that the NFL was very much interested in adding him to the club. He was able to, you know, present a portfolio that was, you know, pretty enticing for the league, right? I mean, to be able to, he's worth, what, $11 billion?
Allegedly, yeah.
Maybe only nine.
Yeah. Yeah. So to have that, you know, cash available, I mean, certainly make, I just went through, you know, purchasing a home, which we've talked about on this, and it's like, you know, if somebody's able to come with all cash, you would think that'd be a pretty, it'd be a pretty nice offer you could make. So yeah, I mean, look, we know this guy is brilliant. He is, you know, one of the top businessmen in America, right? I mean, just look at what he's been able to do. And I think the league is very excited about adding him to its very exclusive club.
I think all of us are going to say very nice things about him, right? Because I think that would probably be the smartest thing to do.
Yeah, right.
But I'm serious. If you pull up some of those videos on YouTube of him talking, he is strikingly smart.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's just, and one of the things that really, that I really caught was he's talking about these topics from left to right to all over the place. And he's well versed on so many of these things, and he's able to, let's just say, dumb down things that I traditionally wouldn't be able to understand.
Yeah.
And he talks about them, and I know his politics are being brought up here and there, but even with that, I really like how he's not just on one side. Just because he says one bad thing about this guy over here doesn't mean he's, I mean, I know that's kind of our world of politics these days. Like, if you think one thing, that means you're all the way over here. And like, it's
right.
He can see and talk to the good and bad of a lot of things right now, not just in his business, but in the world. And there's something really smart about that.
Yeah.
That struck me.
You know what a hedge fund is, Bill?
Ish.
Yeah. Yeah. I read about that a little bit in this process. I'm not an economics major. I took a couple of classes back in the day.
Most writers
them.
Are not.
Right. True. Very true. Good point. But, I mean, he does something that, like, some people will tell you is not really possible, which he basically is able to predict the future pretty successfully when it comes to investments and you know, how that's concerned. And obviously, it's interesting to see how that will play out with the football, on the football field. He's not afraid to.
I mean, his risks have pretty much always turned into big rewards, right?
I mean, he's had some misses, but he's not afraid to take those risks, clearly.
Right.
That's obvious, and he has a good track record along those lines. So how does that work on the football field? I mean, and, you know, specifically, how much will he have as far as risk assessment is concerned on the field? You know what I'm saying? How much will he be involved in what happens on the football field?
I'm curious to find that out, too. I mean, every owner handles that a little bit differently, not even just in this league, but, you know, all other major sports, too. You see varying degrees of ownership involvement in, you know, the matters when it comes to building the team and the decisions that go into whether it be draft day or free agency. I'm curious to see how much David Tepper wants to be involved in those things. If he'll be the type of owner who, says, you know, I've hired people to do that. I'm going to stay out of the way and let them do their thing. Or if he, you know, wants to invest some time into being a part of those discussions and have his voice heard on those matters. I'm curious to see how that unfolds. It seems like he's a very big football fan, grew up a big Steeler fan, Pittsburgh, and I think is very knowledgeable about the game. So is he going to want to use some of that in helping shape his vision of this Panthers football team?
Yeah. Go ahead.
As a fellow Northerner, I really appreciate his candor. And I think that that might take some folks a little bit of time down here to get used to.
A little different, yeah.
But he's going to tell it how it is, and he's going to talk. And I think that's certainly a lot different than the regime that we've known so far in the 24-year history of the Panthers. It's going to be much different. Yeah. And I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast that, like, everything that I was like, since covering the team since 05, I kind of, there's a lot of questions you get that are just like, you know, the answers to, right? You know, they're not going to sign this guy, or they're not going to be interested in this guy, or they right. would, or this is the type of, just now everything's thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. That it's going to take a while before we can really know a lot of these really simple and common answers.
Yeah, until we really get a handle on how this place is going to operate, you know, and what the vision of this team is going to be. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch that all unfold.
Yeah, and I don't think he has all the answers along those lines either, right? I think as a smart guy, too, he's going – I mean, he comes with a good base of knowledge, obviously, having been a minority owner. But I think he's smart enough, too, to see kind of how things are done and, you know, then figure out what he thinks about – you know, approaches. Do you guys know he coached his kids in youth sports? That was one of the cool things.
He took
things.
Out some time. He made sure he wanted to do that.
Yeah, maybe we could research how he was as a coach. Maybe that would give us some.
And kind of like what
input.
You were saying earlier, Bill, about how, you know, how obviously how smart this guy is. I do think that that's part of the appeal with him, is that he does seem kind of like the average Joe at the same time, too, right? You know, like he comes from a kind of humble upbringing in Pittsburgh. And still, you know, like even you just like we saw that picture circulating of him with like the giant Panthers helmet. And like, you know, he just kind of looks like a normal guy.
Sure.
Like he kind of just fits in with, you know, it seems like he could just sit at a table with a bunch of, you know, sports fans and fit in just as well as he could with the owners in the NFL sitting around a table in an owners meeting in Atlanta. So that to me is appealing, too, just to kind of see, you know, how that personality is going to continue to impact things in this community.
I'm looking forward to a guy, and I could be wrong. He could own this team differently than I'm assuming he's going to, but I think he's going to be a guy that takes risks, that wants to do new and different things. I'm looking forward to that. Now, again, once you get him in here, maybe he won't be like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's, and I know it's a fearful time for many, but I think it should be an exciting time.
I agree. I think there's an excitement to that for sure.
Yeah. So, see, this is what people wanted. We haven't talked anything about our personal lives yet, right?
That's true.
What a couple people wanted. Just talk football. And I'm kind of already, you know, really? Are we going to go just talk about receivers now? Are we going to do that?
Anybody has
a story. What's happened to you this week, Brian? You always have a story.
I mean, it's too long and boring for this.
The sickness?
Some adventures at school. I don't really want to
You're going back to school?
Names there with my son. I mean, this is – Max, didn't you mention your lawnmower on a previous podcast?
Yeah, that's
right?
And that was the episode that got criticized, so I don't know if we should go back to the lawnmower discussion.
Okay. Max has a new grill. Again, people might be –
Right.
If this was a radio station, they'd be turning the channel already. So we got to stick to football. What did you guys make about, all right, Ron Rivera? It's interesting game of telephone that happened Saturday about the Garrett Gilbert stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I guess, heard that it was, okay, Garrett Gilbert's the number two now.
Yeah.
But that's not really what was said or asked.
Yeah, right? I think Joe Person of the Charlotte Observer initially asked Ron about it, and at first, Ron said,
"The question was what? Do you remember?
Leader? I mean, would you say there's a leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, for the backup to Cam Newton?" And he first said, "Well, I wouldn't really say there was a leader in the clubhouse, but if I had to say that there was a leader in the clubhouse, I would go Garrett Gilbert." And of course, all the golf fans out there know that leader in the clubhouse obviously references to the guy that's finished his round, so to speak. So in this case, it'd be the guy that's in the fold. So he's just saying of the guys that are currently on the roster behind Cam Newton. But, you know, there's usually guys still out there playing on the course when you make a declaration like that, and they can come in and take over the leadership. if you get
really
by
breaking
now,
down leader in the clubhouse. Yeah, I like that. All right. So I didn't even thought
you
that.
That's how you can tell he's into writing, not the math guy. But
yeah,
I'll break down a phrase for you.
I can't speak for Joe, but I think Joe was just it was a cliche phrase that he was just throwing out to say like, "Who's your number two quarterback?"
You're
right
probably
now?
Right.
But yeah, and you know, Ron was reluctant to really say. You could tell he was kind of like, I mean, I don't really have one right now, but if you're making me give you somebody, I'll say Garrett Gilbert.
Right, so, but maybe he said that, though, because he thought about what leader of the clubhouse meant and was like, I can share
he
this.
He is a golf guy.
That the guy that's currently on the roster, that would be the backup. The if the season starts today cliche as well, you
so
could
the,
say.
The bigger question is, how much does it matter who the number two is?
It only matters.
It mattered to the Eagles. No, it mattered to the Eagles.
Right. That's a great point. Yeah.
And people weren't super high on that backup, by the way, right?
Sure.
I mean, he had done it before in the league, but it was like.
And with the Eagles. He was, remember, he was tremendous.
Right.
With
but
the
still,
Eagles,
wasn't the storyline. This is a shame for the Eagles. Like, there go their.
They were done.
There go their playoff hopes.
I think most people would say, right, if your starting quarterback goes down, your season is pretty much finished.
Correct.
And the Eagles emphatically prove that that doesn't have to be the case at all. In fact, you can win a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback.
No, okay. So that's then look at the options, right, that the Panthers have. They have, say, Garrett Gilbert. They have Kyle Allen,
the rookie.
They have
Taylor Heinicke.
There we go. Right.
Thank you for saying that name, yes.
And then you have options out there like, say, Derek Anderson or old friend Matt Moore. Mm-hmm. Any of those options, do you think any of those options would turn into Nick Foles part two? Or, listen, if Cam Newton goes down, it doesn't.
Yeah.
What options you have right now, it doesn't matter. If Cam Newton goes down for a significant period of time, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Who. Does it matter if you have Matt Moore or Garrett Gilbert?
That's a debate. I don't like to think about these things, Bill, because when I think about the backup quarterback, I think about a one-game situation. I mean, I don't, you know, that's because that's the history of Cam, too, right? He's missed a game here and there. And both of those guys would be fine because one game's not the end of the world. But if it was he went down for a while or you need somebody else in the playoffs, well, are you asking me which of those guys I would want to see in
that
role?
No, I'm saying does it matter? So if Cam's gone for more than a game, does it matter if you have Garrett Gilbert or Matt Moore in there?
Yeah, like in my head,
dead in the water?
Yeah,
right.
If Cam goes down, this team kind of goes down with it. It's kind of the Foles thing was such a perfect example of like why you shouldn't think that way, but that's just kind of how I've.
And it's pretty much because of the Foles thing is the only reason I say because I think you're right. The team would assume, you would assume they're in trouble.
So how much
should
you invest
happens.
Now? Because I know a lot of people are still asking about who's number two, who's number two, and rightfully so. I get it. But how much do you invest in going to get Derek Anderson off the golf course or Matt Moore back in here? How much do you really want to put in that? Or do you just roll the dice with the unknown like Garrett Gilbert? You don't. Okay. No one expects him to go out there and be the next Nick Foles. But how do you know unless he's actually out there? Because you already know what you have in Derek Anderson and Matt Moore.
Right. And do you want to learn more? We also know what the hope level is for this staff about these other guys developing. We don't have a great feel for that yet. Is Vinny Testaverde available in a pinch?
He's always available.
Right. But part of my point there is like, do you roll with the young guys? And then if you realize if there is an extended injury, could Derek Anderson come in off the street short notice because he's been in the system so long? I don't know.
Yeah, I think the interesting question is like, if let's say somewhere midway through the season, Cam has to miss a week or 2 weeks, who do you feel better about having to plug into the starting lineup as your quarterback? Somebody who's been there and done it, like a DA or a Matt Moore, or having to turn to somebody, let's say it was Garrett Gilbert, who's literally never been out there for a meaningful snap in his NFL career. And I always kind of thought, well, I'd prefer the guy who's been out there and done it before. Like, I would just feel more comfortable if, like, this was a game that we really, you know, we needed to win. If, let's say, you know, if I'm the Panthers and, you know, we're in a division race and it's like, I mean, we can't lose ground. I mean, I'd feel better about plugging in a guy who's gone out and won games in the NFL before. But then, you know, I also hear the argument for, like, look what Trevor Siemian did to the Panthers back in that season opener when it was, like, a total unknown quantity, had never done it before. You also had that challenge of, look, there's no tape on this guy, and we don't really quite sure, you know, exactly what we're going to see. and Simeon beat that Panthers team. So I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong to think that you really got you should have that veteran who's been there, done it. Maybe there is merit to throwing out a kid who's never done it and presenting that kind of challenge to an
opponent. Do any of us have like opinions on this though? I feel like all of us are right in the middle. I know I am. I mean, I guess I'm skewed towards more. No, of course you got to go get a guy like DA or Matt Moore before the season starts. But if you give me the argument that no, let's just roll the dice with these young guys because we don't know what we have in them, what we do know what we have in the vets, I won't really try and argue with you all that hard. I mean, you look at, I think a perfect example is Green Bay last year. Your superstar quarterback goes down. You know your season's pretty much toast. They try and talk up Hundley. Was his first name Nick? Is it
Brett
Nick?
Hundley.
Brett Hundley. I think Nick is a catcher, a longtime MLB catcher.
So there was a yes. Nick Hundley. But yeah, they talk up Hundley, and you know, bless his heart, they're not. It's just not enough.
Yeah, it was rough.
But okay. Insert Derek Anderson or Matt Moore in that situation. Would it have been that much better?
Yeah. What was the record with Hundley though? It was not pretty, but I still feel like they somehow managed to go three and three, something like that. Like
they still had a chance to limp in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I think they scrapped together a chance. Yeah. It wasn't a total disaster. But yeah, to your question, I don't know. I mean, yeah, as much as, you know, you say there's merit to those guys who've been through it before, is the level of play going to be that much higher? Probably not, right? And it's just kind of thinking about the mindset going into the game. And I think even about from a locker room perspective, if I'm like a veteran on that team and I know that the guy going out there to start a quarterback has won games in his league before, I'd probably feel better about my chances than a rookie getting thrown to the wolves, so to speak.
Right, but I think
we're out there for his first start.
But I think we're lukewarm because honestly, we're not going to be excited about anyone under center beyond
Cam.
Right.
So
of
I guess
course.
My point is: should they go out and get Derek Anderson back or Matt Moore, or do you just roll with the guys you have right now?
I mean, I would
get excited about Derek Anderson or Matt Moore, but also, I also think it's pretty really.
I guess I would like to see if a clear guy emerges from these young guys they have on the roster. This team's carried three quarterbacks before, right? So get a DA or a Matt Moore. Keep the one of those that you like the best.
But like Kyle Allen, you wrote about him this week.
Right.
Like he couldn't even keep a starting job in college.
I know. I said keep the one you like the best. So, but is there a clear leader? I mean, did Ron hesitate because he doesn't want to – because that decision is not settled yet when he answered the question, or did he hesitate because it's not clear which of those guys is the best option that's currently on the roster? I don't know.
To answer your question, if I was playing GM, I'd probably bring in a guy who's been around the league for a while.
You can have both. Yeah.
But
I have no idea what they're asking. What if they're asking like 1.5?
And that's
would you do
that's
that?
The
would
thing.
You give them 1.5?
Yeah. I might then at a certain point, if I felt the price tag was a little too much, to your point, I'd say, you know what? I'm going to go with a young guy. It doesn't make that big of a difference.
And maybe Vinny later if you need him.
And then, if you're desperate. Yeah.
I mean, it just seems...
That's the one thing about those guys who've been around a while is if, like, you could literally call them mid-season and they know enough that they could come in and play that same week. Whereas a young guy is like, you really have to get them ready with a lot of prep.
Didn't this team get Brian St. Pierre ready in a week?
There's some layers to that one. I guess we should stop talking about this because I feel like we're going around in circles.
Yeah, people are going to be like, can you start talking about lawnmowers or something?
I feel it's kind of a little iffy that if you're going to go into the season with Garrett Gilbert as your backup quarterback. I just feel like that's not right.
It seems like a box left unchecked, right? Like the backup quarterback thing is still.
But the counter argument is, well, what's Derek Anderson or Matt Moore going to solve?
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, what was it? A couple of years ago where DA, you know, won those two games and the talk was always, you know, it's what a great asset it is to have a
that
guy
was
like DA.
Back then.
Right.
Then kind of last year, it looked a little different. Yeah. So, yeah.
Hmm. We can talk about one more football thing. Should we talk about Russell Shepard's release and the receivers or Taylor Moton in the guards?
You want to flip a coin? I don't know. I mean, you mentioned Russell first.
All right, then we'll go with that.
Sure.
Writing was on the wall for that one, right?
It seemed like it was, right? Just think about where this roster has come. Well, from a receiver standpoint and running back standpoint, really, in the last little while here. It would have been tough for him to to make the roster, right? I mean, we feel that way, obviously. I mean,
you get the six. You got Funchess, DJ, Samuel, Jarius Wright, Torrey Smith, Demir Bird.
Yeah.
That top six, and that's if they keep six.
You usually don't keep six, actually, yeah. Right? I think the average for the team has been five over the last, say, 5 years on the 53 man.
I mean, Russell's a good special teams player, but, I mean, his chances as a receiver last year just weren't. Yeah, right. Weren't enough to really crack him in.
Yeah, promising start, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, and I just remember when Russell first signed, you know, and meeting him for the first time in the building, like probably the most like excited I've seen a guy mm-hmm. sign with this team. I mean, and he's like an excitable dude, but I just like remember the handshake, like, and you like took my hand off. He was just like so excited to be here, and he was talking about how he really felt this team believed that he could take the next step as a wide receiver. Like, he was coming off a decent year in Tampa Bay. It was like 30 some odd catches. Yep. And he kind of proved, like, he might be worth taking a chance on and see how much further this game can elevate for him as a wide receiver spot. And it just never happened here. You know, it just seemed like it just wasn't a fit after, yeah, we mentioned that first touchdown in the season.
Which was still kind of a freak touchdown anyway.
Yeah, but still, first touchdown of the year. We had gone through the spring and summer, and, like, he and Cam were pretty tight. He brought kind of a lot of energy to the locker room and to the huddle. And it was like, oh, I mean, this guy is going to inject a nice kind of bit of – something to this offense. And yeah, it just, you just went week after week with talking to Russell about the other guys. You know, he just wasn't doing much. And that was the thing. I remember talking to him a little bit before the season started, and it was like clear that he was like the veteran in the room that was going to be like maybe even the leader of the receiver group. That's kind of what his mm-hmm. label was becoming. And he even made the point, it was like, you have to produce to lead. You know, you can't just lead by being a good locker room guy who's energetic all the time. Like, they're only going to follow you as a leader if you're making plays. And I think that was the thing. He just wasn't really making plays for this team, and thus here we are with him looking for a new place to work.
And there were opportunities, right? I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. That was kind of when he knew that it wasn't going to work out. But certainly he had chances when the Kalen Clays of the world ended up, you know, making a few more plays than he did, to be honest, when injuries opened the door for him to have more snaps, but it just never happened. So I think I'll miss talking to him, though. Definitely a good quote. We just kind of were looking for more reasons to talk to him, I feel like. You know, wishing there were more reasons to talk to him as the season went along.
Yeah, I think he'll make like a fantastic assistant coach in college. Like, if he whenever he decides he's done playing, like the energy he has, he's always talking about college football, big LSU supporter after his playing days there. Like, I could see him hitting the recruiting trail and being really good. He's a fun guy to talk to and just full of energy. And yeah, I wish him well. I thought he was a good guy to have around.
You made a good point to me this week. One of those folks, be careful what you wish for things, right? You look back on the day or those days that Russell signed.
Yeah.
And Russell, receiver Charles Johnson, Captain Munnerlin coming back, and Matt Khalil. You know, fans want action that first day or two of free agency. And Julius was in that group too.
True.
But the people want action, and they got action that offseason right at the beginning of free agency. But look how it's really played out.
Right.
Yep. And I know the other part, you know, the outgoing part of that equation too was Ted Ginn, of course. I know when you think about, you know, they brought in Russell Shepard and Charles Johnson, who I remember at the time Dave Gettleman talking about his vertical speed, and he was a guy who could stretch the field. And I don't remember exactly what the numbers were, but they just weren't comfortable paying Ted Ginn what he ended up getting paid in New Orleans. And that has turned out to really kind of bite him.
Yep. And it definitely did last year. 100%. Yeah, and that's when Curtis couldn't stay on the field.
Not just not having Ted, but what he did with your division rival who beat you three times in the same season. I mean, it really kind of twisted the knife a little bit with how that all unfolded.
And now because you're not sure if Demir can stay on the field or what you're going to get out of Curtis, who as of right now looks fantastic, but once you get him on the field and hitting again and whatnot, so you had to go out and get even extra insurance with Torrey Smith.
And because the word I will say that we kept hearing from Norv Turner with the signing like of Torrey Smith, yes, everybody knows he's fast and he's got vertical speed and he's been there and done it. He has a Super Bowl ring, but he used the word durable.
Right.
That was the thing that he kept referencing with him. And with a lot of these speed guys, that's going to always be a question mark. You know, can you count on them to be out on the field? Are you going to be able to even use that speed? Or is there going to be a hammy issue? Is there going to be some sort of injury that keeps him off? And that was the thing with Torrey Smith, and credit to Ted Ginn as well. Those guys are really fast, and they manage to get themselves out there every Sunday.
You need, and I know people ripped Ted for his hands, but man, they missed him so badly last year. You need that threat going downfield, especially with this offense. Now, Norv's or with Mishula's offense. Norv's, I don't know how much. It didn't work with Mike Shula's offense. The middle of the field was so clogged, and it happened a few years. It happened back in 14 when they got rid of Jason Avant, and they had to get in. Philly Brown, right. But that middle of the field would always get so clogged, and then last year with Kelvin in there and not having the Ted Ginn, it just get too clogged. So they need somebody to go deep.
I think Torrey Smith can do that, right? I mean. Yeah, I mean, Kalen Clay, I mentioned him earlier. I mean, obviously, even that made it a moderate difference at times, right, when he was out there. It at least unclogged it a little bit. Mm-hmm. He made a couple of plays as well.
It also didn't help last year that Cam couldn't throw downfield for the first 2 weeks. And then because he wasn't doing that even in practice, they never were really a big threat last year to even complete any of those deep passes.
Yeah.
Good point.
So a healthier Cam Newton and with a full off season and being able to actually practice those passes should make a big difference.
Yeah, that's fair. But again, I know, cannot reiterate enough, that offense needed somebody to stretch the field. And when it didn't have it, it was clear that it wasn't working.
Right.
It was just going to continue to be an issue until they figured out a way to stretch defenses.
All right. Well, last chance to give us a personal story, Brian. You got anything?
I'm pretty boring this week, Bill.
Well, at least publicly.
Yeah, true.
What you're able to share.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, I'll try to bring it stronger next week. I apologize. Still slightly under the weather, I will say that. Went to the doctor yesterday. Hey, yeah. I got a story for you.
There you go, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. So how can you be sick for 2 weeks, go to the doctor, and walk out without a prescription? But that's what I managed to do.
Because you're probably done with whatever's...
Let it run its course is what the doctor said. He said it could be up to another month. Can you imagine that?
That'll be fun. Good for us, Max.
Yeah. I mean, that's and for you, I mean, you just want to at least walk out of there with something to feel like it was worth the visit.
Agree.
Even if he gave you little like pills of sugar.
Yes. And I had
just in your mind.
Did you have a copay?
I did the copay. It's a good deal. Good insurance though.
Yeah. It's but, good insurance, but still you had to pay the copay. So you had to pay something a little, right?
Like yeah. Pocket. Yeah. But 5 minutes out of the door, I had regrets. Like, you know what? I should have pushed it. I should have said pretty much to Max's point, give me a placebo. Give me something.
Right. Yeah. Right. Just something to make you feel like it. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm
next
not looking
week.
Forward to 6 weeks of Brian Beans.
No. Next week at this time, we'll be back from Atlanta because we'll be going down to Atlanta to be there on Tuesday. And perhaps we will have some time with David Tepper by then, and we'll be able to talk a little bit more about him.
Yeah, it will be interesting, that's for sure.
Interesting is a word for it, that's for sure. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.